If you're enjoying this podcast, please leave us a review and tap the follow button so that you never miss an episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another Monday evening, the best night of the week. You know what that means? It's time for another episode of RFRX. I'm your host, Kara Griffin, and I am here with the fabulous, the amazing RFR ambassador and fearless psychic, Helen Green. How are you, Helen?
Good. How you doing, my friend Kara?
I am doing well. I am glad to be here. You may notice from the change of background that I am back home again, joining you from the great state of Texas. Well, the state of Texas anyway. And I am glad to be back. What have you been up to this past week?
I wish I had something exciting to say, but I don't. I worked a lot, and then over the weekend I spent the whole weekend playing Assassin's Creed Unity. That was my weekend, and it was wonderful because I didn't have to do anything after a stressful week of work. So
yeah,
I unplugged my brain. So
I completely agree. I have found that some mindless gaming works wonders to reset after a long week. I'm more of a Civilization fan myself, but Assassin's
Creed. I like randomly murdering people and not feeling bad about it.
So. Fair enough. It's good to do that on a game then and not in real life.
Yeah, totally. Yes. I do not recommend it in real life.
No.
Putting my disclaimer out there.
Do not murder people in real life.
No.
Today's lesson. It's all types of bad. Yes. Yes, indeed.
It is frowned upon.
It is. By most, you know, religions and by the secular community as well. It's one of those very few things that most people agree on is bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yes. Fair enough. Well, we will only do that in gaming.
You can do it in gaming all you want.
Yeah.
Eat it all you want.
Fair enough. Without further ado, what do you say we get started, Helen?
I'm ready to get started.
I am too.
I have my Monday fun day excitement going on. So we need to get this party started.
We need to get this going. Absolutely. Well, then I will go ahead and introduce our guest, Janice Selby. She has spent nearly four decades as an evangelical Christian, or she spent nearly four decades as an evangelical Christian. Grammar is important. After divorcing her husband and her religion, she became a registered professional counselor and religious recovery consultant. In addition to working one-on-one with clients recovering from religious trauma, Janice developed the Divorcing Religion Workshop and founded the Conference on Religious Trauma, as well as the upcoming Shameless Sexuality Life After Purity Culture online conference, which is happening in October next month. And today, most exciting of all, Janice has launched her newest offering, the Divorcing Religion Podcast. I am so excited about this. Congratulations on all of the good work you are doing, Janice. And please tell us more about this podcast. What is going on?
Thank you for that lovely introduction. Yes, it's been a very exciting day over here with the launch of the Divorcing Religion podcast. And my very first guest was Seth Andrews, the Thinking Atheist. And so I had a really fun interview with him, and up and coming, I have Daryl Ray, beloved founder of Recovering from Religion. We did an interview. Hemant Mehta, the Friendly Atheist. I got all the big guns here. And really, we'll be talking about what it's like to experience religious trauma and to recover from it, and resources, and then just whatever else seems to be going on in the media and the world that relates to religious trauma, because there's a lot. The world's having a moment.
That is true.
It is.
And yeah, that is much needed work. I am so glad that you are out there doing that. And I cannot wait to consume greedily all of your content.
You're doing the good work, Janice.
Thank you. Yes. So people who want to listen to the podcast can go to my website, divorcing-religion.com, divorcing-religion.com, however you say that little line in there, divorcingreligion.com, and you'll find the podcast in there.
Excellent. Thank you. Yes, someone was just asking that in the chat. So I dropped that in there. And we will, of course, put these links in the chat and in the show notes as well for when it goes online. So those will all be available for people to see and use and benefit from. And thank you so much for all of those services you are providing.
Yeah, I am tired when I listen to all the things I'm doing. When you were saying all the things that I was doing, I'm like, holy shit, no wonder I'm tired. I'm trying to do everything.
Yes, it's a lot. And like you said, there's such a need for it. You know, we try to fill in everything we can. Oh, and we're
seeing Sasha.
Yes, I just got it.
Divorcing religion, that's my logo.
I like pretty that cool. logo.
Get it wherever you get cool. your podcast, people.
Yes. That's exactly right. Yeah. So hopefully we'll have a good amount of people listening and learning from that podcast. And of course, you mentioned the Conference on Religious Trauma. We now have a YouTube channel, the Conference on Religious Trauma. And so I'm posting for free all the sessions from the inaugural Conference on Religious Trauma, Court 2021, including beloved Dr. Daryl Ray. His session is up there. So you can go on YouTube and do the Conference on Religious Trauma channel on YouTube.
Amazing. And I am dropping those links into the chat as well.
Nice.
Someone else Thank was you. Asking about that. So those are both in there.
What is the date for this, the one, this coming one?
Well, the Shameless Sexuality, Life After Purity Culture, that conference is happening October 14th to 16th. And people can go to shamelesssexuality.org. It does not stand for .orgasm, but that might help you remember it. Shamelesssexuality.org. And you can get your tickets there. And it's just going to be fantastic. I mean, I'd say it's going to be exciting and it's going to be exciting.
Oh, all right. Exciting.org.
Yeah. Not only October is the best month because it's spooky month, it's also sexy month. So it's spooky and sexy and
Seriously.
shameless.
Oh my God. I love the shameless part of it because those of us who grew up under purity culture indoctrination, there can be a lot of shame around sex. And we just want sex to be the fun, amazing, great thing that it is. And some people don't even want sex, don't want to have anything to do with it. And that's fine too.
Yes, that is an excellent point. And that was a fabulous segue as well to our topic for this evening. Well done. It's like you have a podcast or something and you know how to do this.
Dan says how to take control.
Yes. In the bedroom too. Oh, sorry.
Yes, tell us more about that. And by that, I mean, you know, shameless sexuality. And what does that have to do with purity culture? What's going on with purity culture that might be problematic for people? What is it?
You know, purity culture, I just feel like it should be called shame culture because that's really what it feels like. And we typically think of purity culture coming into focus in the 90s and 2000s. And there was a whole industry really that popped up around it with, as we say, purity balls. I know it sounds funny, but I mean, it's a type of ball where the little girls would get dressed up and their father, they would go to a ball and they would promise and pledge there that they would never, ever, ever have sex with anyone until with any husband until they got married. And this, so you have children and teens making this promise to their father. And then there was, you know, purity rings. Don't forget there was a big thing in purity rings. And so it really did just become a whole industry, but it was very much about controlling sex and gender. And it isn't limited to evangelicalism. I mean, really all the Abrahamic religions, the big three there, there's a lot of hymen worship that goes on and a lot of trying to monitor and control the girls and boys. And so the boys were told that their thoughts were bad and dirty, and the girls were told that they were bad and dirty. You know, you see the difference there. So females had to kind of almost dress in such a way to be invisible, So always in skirts and dresses. I'm talking for my own children when I was raising daughters. And I was just all in for evangelicalism and fundamentalism. I wore a head covering and just had a very restricted life and homeschooled our daughters and really severely restricted their lives as well. So they could only wear skirts and dresses, and there was no makeup or jewelry. I didn't even wear a wedding ring. And really, I tried to make sure the devil couldn't get in. He couldn't get a foothold. He couldn't even get in through a window. So I worked really hard at that. Obviously, it didn't work. But yeah, that was a part of our, that was a part of my marriage and the way that I raised my children. And I was crazier for it than my husband at the time. He wasn't the one that was so insistent. He would tell me, he was worried. He'd say, you know, you're making your circle smaller and smaller. The more fundamentalist you get, how small are you going to make that circle? Pretty damn small, apparently, was how small I got that circle, until finally I couldn't take it anymore. But that's for another talk that I'll have with you. But yeah, so we're supposed to be in purity culture, really supposed to be pretty sexless before marriage, not even to think about sex, not to have crushes, certainly not to masturbate or think about pleasuring yourself in any way at all, or even getting to know your body. So we asked that poll at the beginning with some questions that kind of allude to purity culture about, did your parents talk to you frankly about sex? Did you even know what was going on with your body? Or was it more like, you know, okay, you've got your period, now just keep your legs closed and that kind of thing. And it can be, it can bring up such a shame for us, and it can even lead to a disconnection for between us and our own body. If you're taught that touching yourself is bad, or, you know, even looking at yourself is bad, or thinking about the other sex, or thinking about whatever sex and gender you're attracted to, if that's drummed into you, that that's bad and wicked and sinful, then it's not like you can just flip a switch when you get married and it's going to be great. Because no, there's a lot of indoctrination that's gone on year in and year out. And I even hear from folks now who are in their 40s and 50s, some of them, and they were really saving themselves for just the right Christian person who never showed up. And now they've walked away from the faith. They're not religious at all. And they feel like not having had sex just weighs them down, makes them so different. And they're not even sure how to talk to someone that they're interested in. They just don't know how it's done. So that can be pretty traumatizing in itself.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. And I feel like you just went through so many bits and pieces of ways that that purity culture can be so harmful to people and have such a lasting impact. I completely agree. I grew up in that as well and can attest to all of what you just said. I'm wondering, would you like to look at the poll results that you mentioned?
Yes, let's do it.
We had, and I want to say thank you to all of our participants. We had 100% participation in this poll. Everyone who was here during the poll answered it. So thank you all for participating. And I am going to share the results now so y'all can see how everyone answered, and I'll read it out too, so people who are listening can hear as well. So the first question asked, were your parents frank with you about sexuality and welcome your questions? So 19% of people said yes, 33% said no, 17% said somewhat, and 31% never discussed sexuality with their parents at all.
Wow.
So that was question one. I'll go ahead and go through all of them and then we can unpack all this. Question two was, did your parents condemn sex outside of hetero marriage? 58% said yes, they did. 22% said no, 3% were not sure, and 17% again never discussed this with their parents. The third question, did you marry young in order to have sex? Only 6% said yes, which surprised me, because I would have answered yes to that. 58% said no, and 36% said they have never been married. And then finally, question number 4, do you have questions about dating, sex, gender identity, attraction, polyamory, et cetera? 39% of people have questions. So hopefully we'll get to those later.
All right. Excellent. That sounds like we're right on track then with the Shameless Sexuality Life After Purity Culture conference, because I have over 15 speakers. There's psychologists, sex therapists, sex educators, social workers, authors, advocates, from just such a broad background. I really tried to make it as diverse as possible, including a speaker who focuses on advocacy around disability, physical disability, and sexuality, because I think that's something that's really important. We're going to be, it'll be starting on the Friday evening, and then we'll go all the way through Sunday, and you're going to be hearing some really interesting things. And I mean, so a time of learning. And then one thing I'm really looking forward to is a panel discussion we'll be having called More Than Monogamy. And so my friend Marie Lepage will be leading that discussion. Love Marie and her work. And there'll be a group of us on there who have had some experience with opening up our marriages or moving from the straight world into the LGBTQIA two-spirit plus community. So just lots of different backgrounds people are coming from, and we want people to be able to ask questions and hear about what some of our experiences have been like if we've embraced polyamory or some of these things that are more than monogamy.
Excellent. And that's such a good point that you bring up, all of these other aspects of sexuality and different ways of being a sexual being. I really feel like that does belong there as well, because, in my experience with purity culture, it was not just about purity, or as you put it, really about shaming people into feeling like they're not pure enough, which is a very important distinction that I'm glad you brought up. But it's also a lot about promoting particular norms and ways that sex has to be that excludes all of those other groups of people and behaviors that you just described. Yeah, that is really important. I am so glad you were doing that work, because it matters. And speaking of it matters, that was another topic we were going to discuss on this show. So I wonder if we could unpack that a little bit. You told us what purity culture is, but this was something that was kind of big in the 90s and a little bit into the early 2000s. Okay, that was a while back. Why are we still talking about this? Why is this still relevant to us today?
I think because, well, when we see what's going on in the States right now, I'm in Canada, but just watching the overturning of Roe versus Wade and seeing the rise of Christian nationalism in pretty much most countries, but in your country in particular, and seeing how many states not only seem to be outlawing women's right to access abortions, but also we see so much abstinence teaching. I've got my air quotes in the schools. So we're, instead of actually teaching children and young people about the changes, their physiological changes their bodies are going to go through, and teaching them also about consent and how to have safer sex and different forms of birth control that are available, those things are really important. It's certainly as important as driving a car, even more so. And like driving a car, it can be wonderful and fun. It can also have some danger with it. So we want young people to be prepared when they're getting ready to have sex for the first time. And I don't want it to be shameful for people. I want it to be just enjoyable and pleasurable and whatever they hope it will be. But we need to educate people accurately about sex and sexuality and everything that goes along with that.
I think for someone that was raised Catholic, and now I raise 2 children, and I brushed all that purity culture bullshit aside. Catholic has its own version of it, but I gave my kids a regular sex education, because I didn't want them to go through the shame and all the stuff that came up when I was going through my own discovery of who I was as a sexual being. And I, like you were mentioning, like a lot of parents, you know, like are brought up in, everybody's that are brought up in these like purity cultures, and sex is bad, and it should only be used to make babies, or you're only supposed to have sex with your spouse or whatever it is. When they can, because of the shame, they can't accept that their children are going to grow up to be sexual beings, and they're going to have their own desires and the things that they want and how they're going to navigate that stuff. And it's actually toxic, the parents, for the relationship that they have with their children, because then their kids are going to go seek out that information, and the information that they get will could be really bad information, information that's not going to help them.
Hello, my name is Dr. Kayla Black, and I'm a clinical psychologist, professor, author, and the director of the Secular Therapy Project. In case you aren't familiar with it, the Secular Therapy Project is a program of recovering from religion that aims to help secular, non-religious people find good mental health care. Specifically, we screen our therapists to make sure that they're appropriately licensed, use the most evidence-based types of therapy, and that they are secular and non-religious themselves. This helps ensure that science and reason are what guides your therapist, not personal religious beliefs. If you'd like to learn more, or to look for a mental health professional yourself, or if you'd like to apply to be one of our therapists, please visit us online at seculartherapy.org.
Oh my God, that's you're leading right into bad sex advice. I brought some of that along here with me because, oh my God, the stuff that's so terrible.
Yes.
There's some
so
shit
bad.
Growing up, let me tell you.
Yes. Well, I do want me to read you some of the bad sex advice that I...
Please take none of this advice.
I've either heard it or read it on the internet, so you know it must be true.
It must be true.
One of the most common things, certainly I think that people can teach their kids when they're doing purity culture, is they might tell them that masturbation will ruin sex. And nothing could be farther from the truth. You want to get to know yourself and your body and what pleases you, what feels good and what doesn't feel good, so that if you do end up with a partner, you can give your partner some guidance and direction so that they know. Because how do they know? They're not a psychic. They can't tell. Well, nobody's a psychic, but you know what I mean. So it's up to us to share with our partners what we like and don't like. So that's completely untrue. Masturbation will not ruin sex. Here's another one that I heard at different times. Don't make any noise during sex. I'm like,
oh dear.
Oh, how is that possible? I like making noise. I like noisy sex. So that, but you know, some people don't, and that's okay. But people have to be free to absolutely express themselves how they feel comfortable expressing themselves. Oh, this one. Okay. Sorry, guys. I think you might cringe here. Dip your balls in a mug of hot water to kill the sperm. Then she can't get pregnant.
Okay, I want to know how hot does the water have to be to kill the sperm? Because that sounds like it would be painful.
Terrible.
It's like Tucker idea. Carlson, and you're like tanning your balls. like it sounds like that.
Oh yeah. Does the infrared work? Wait, isn't that supposed to increase the sperm count? Wait, I think we're getting conflicting information here.
I'm confused. How does this work?
Do not recommend. Oh, here is a very interesting one. When I had been watching a reality show, you know how those aren't really real, but this one was about some Amish young people who were on their Rumspringa, their year away. And one of them had sex. And so the next morning she's talking, you know, in a group with some other people, and she tells them, I had sex. And they're like, oh my God, did you use protection? And she said, well, I did what we do in our community. I did 15 jumping jacks after we had sex. And that was their idea of birth control.
I want to so, know what the peer-reviewed paper was where they determined that 15 was the right number of jumping jacks. You had 14, 16, not enough. 16, too many. It's unnecessary. Where's the data?
Oh where's the data? I don't think there's a lot of data.
Is the idea that like the jumping up and down is going to flush the fluid out of you?
I think like that's a probably. Faucet.
like you're jingling the faucet to get it to work, like get the water out.
No. This next one, I read it and I felt a little bit sad. It's if you sleep with more than five people, you will wake up at 35 and hate yourself. And you don't have to hate yourself. No matter how many people you have been intimate with or not been intimate with, that has nothing to do with how you should feel about yourself. So anyone who's telling you that kind of nonsense, you can give it right back to them. We're not having it. That's ridiculous.
That is, again, a very specific claim with particular numbers specified.
35.
Five at the same time. Yes.
You have to do 15 jumping jacks.
Per person.
Per person. That's exactly.
Yeah. So if I do 75 jumping jacks, though, will I still be okay at 35?
I wouldn't be okay after I did 75 jumping jacks. I think I'd pass out.
Oh, my goodness. That is really fascinating.
It's funny and terrible. I know we're laughing at a lot of these things because they're so absurd, but they're really terrible things to be teaching people. Like these ideas that like birth control equates to jumping jacks, and you know, if you have, depending on how many sexual partners you have, you should feel ashamed if it's more than five people, and it's so ridiculous, and it makes me angry that this stuff is being taught to people on something that there's 7 billion people, man, on the planet. Everybody's fucking. So like, I'm sorry. People are having sex.
We all do it. I have one last one that it really did make me laugh. So I can't say whether it's true or not, but would you like to hear it? I think it's a good one.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. This was a young man submitted this, and he said, my bad sex advice was to have your girlfriend put a mint in her mouth before giving you oral. Not really bad advice in and of itself, but we didn't have any mints. So she grabbed a breath strip and went down on me before it was fully dissolved. It promptly stuck to my penis and burned with the fury of 10,000 icy suns. It wouldn't wash off for a full 5 minutes. And afterwards, my girlfriend laughed so hard at my convulsing agony. All we could do was go to bed and try to forget the night ever happened.
Oh, wow.
So we don't recommend breath strips. No,
no, no. Also, don't laugh at your partner when they're in agonizing pain.
That is also a good takeaway from that.
Yeah, I would have been offended by that. Yeah, I mean, so, unless it was, you know, something we had plans to do, you know, and that was, you know, agreed upon.
I mean, no kink shaming. No
right,
kink shaming.
Right.
that's very true as well. Yeah. And so I feel like we need to prepare our children, you know, for one day, what they may encounter, what's going on with their body. We want them to feel like they can ask us anything, and we'll always respond, you know, calmly as best we can. Even our face may turn crimson, you know, because we're like, oh my God, this question is so embarrassing. Children are so just innocent and lovely. And when they come to us with questions, and when our adolescents, if we're lucky enough to have teenagers who come to us with their questions, we are lucky indeed. So we want to always meet them with compassion and honesty in our answers, and show them, if we don't know the answer to something, we're going to help them find it. We're going to show them where they can look it up and find the answer. And that also, of course, makes me think of porn. And so many people raised in purity culture, the whole idea of watching porn, watching intimate videos of other people is is just terrible. They hate it so much, or they have such conflicting feelings about it. And so this is something also that's good to talk about. And in case people don't know, there is something called ethical porn out there, where everyone who's participating in the making of the video wants to be there, is adequately compensated. It's an atmosphere of safety. Everyone's sexually safe. So you can Google, you know, ethical porn. I think I might've even sent a website along there. We don't have to be ashamed when it comes to sex and learning about sex. Some people find it very helpful if they've never had even an intimate encounter with another person. They want to just start by watching some romantic movies or reading some romantic books. And then they might dig a little deeper, look a little bit more at some of this that I'm talking about, ethical porn. There's just no shame involved in it. We don't have to feel shame around sex.
I think that you mentioned that. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead, Helen.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, I know that I'm mentioning, because I just raised two teenagers, so this is all fresh in my brain. But like, you have, like, I know this is not the easiest conversation to have, but you kind of have to talk to your kids about the porn they're consuming, because if you just let them all willy nilly on Pornhub, there's going to be some crap on there you don't want them to see. There's abusive stuff on there. There's messages about women and men, and that can be very toxic. And to like a 14, 15 year old brain that doesn't understand like sexual politics and how people are supposed to treat each other, they think that this is what sex is, when the majority of people, you know, don't have that dynamic going on in the bedroom for good, healthy sexuality, what good, healthy sexuality looks like, and what consensual kink looks like, yes, what real kink looks like. Yeah. And those are the conversations that it's not the most comfortable. I'm telling you, this is not a comfortable conversation. I suggest having a couple glasses of wine first, like whatever's going to get you through it. But these are the type of conversations that you have to have, because if you don't want your kids to have really confusing ideas of what sexuality and sexual identity and all these different things are, you're going to have uncomfortable conversations. It is yeah, what it is.
Yeah. And it's imperative also that we really spend time talking with our kids about consent, the idea of consent. And this can even be, I mean, when your kid is five and Aunt Georgie comes over and she's wanting to pinch their cheek and give them a big hug, we can talk to our kids and say, do you feel like giving Auntie a hug right now? And then they can say, oh, yes, they do, or no, they don't. And then we must immediately step in if the answer is no, to let our kids know that we will protect them when they say something, and just teaching them again that their body is their own. I know Jamie Lee Finch wrote a book, Your Body Is Your Own, and Linda K. Klein wrote a book called Pure, and it's all about purity culture. And I think Linda is still a believer herself, still a Christian, and I will say her book is good. She raised some excellent points. It was very educational, that book. And so I also have sent along a list of books that might be interesting for folks who are interested in this topic, and some websites and other things that are helpful resources. And I encourage you to pick up a ticket for the Shameless Sexuality Life After Purity Culture Conference. If you are a therapist and you're working with people in this demographic recovering from religious trauma and purity culture, you don't want to miss it. And we have continuing education credits available. If you're just someone who grew up in it and you want to learn more about how you can heal from purity culture indoctrination, you are also very welcome to attend. And if you really want to attend and you're struggling with finances, just send me an email. I want people to be able to attend this event. I think it's that important. So I do have partial scholarships available. I'd love to see everyone there who has an interest.
That is fantastic. I am so glad that you're putting that on. I think there are so many people who have been affected by purity culture, even who may not have heard it called that before or yeah. didn't know that that's what it was, but mm-hmm. who have grown up with those ideas mm-hmm. getting into the way they were raised. And I really enjoyed that book Pure as well by Linda K. Klein that you mentioned. And yeah, she does mention that she is still a believer in that, but I almost feel like in some ways that adds to the conversation, and that this isn't a conversation that only secular people are having. I know a lot of like my more religious family members like mm-hmm. to set this up as, you know, this conflict between moral people and immoral people, and the moral people are into purity culture and right. all those atheists just want to go sin. And that's not it. Even people among, you know, inside the Christian church have pointed out how extraordinarily damaging this whole framework of thinking has been to people, ruined lives and relationships.
Yes. And particularly also the LGBTQIA two-spirit plus community has just suffered terribly as a result of purity culture indoctrination and being told that heterosex is the only sex that you are allowed yes. to have, and you are broken and there's something wrong with you if you don't fit this precise, very limited mold. So we have a number of speakers who will be addressing this topic who are members of the LGBTQ community, including a trans counselor who's a friend of mine here in Canada. I'm so glad she'll be joining us. I'm really looking forward to hearing about her experience as well.
Ooh, that sounds very interesting. I will be interested to hear about that too, because you're absolutely right. It's not even just that in purity culture, oh, okay, well, once you're married, everything about sex is okay. There's still so many rules around it. You have to be in a heterosexual marriage relationship that's approved by God and your church, and you have to be engaging in certain kinds of sex acts with, you know, at the right frequency and the right way,
in the right position.
Yes Don't be doing any crazy stuff.
Well, like I like on this topic, like I think it was in the Orthodox Jewish community that they were almost completely covered in sheet except for their genitals. And it was missionary. They could have sex, but it was like real quick, just to, you know, make sure that, you know, we're trying to make babies. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Like it was, mm-hmm. it was definitely like a business arrangement. Like we just got to be in and out, mm-hmm. get it done, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And it was one of the, like, it's not all in the Jewish community, but in this particular right. sex that it was taught that this particular sex is the mm-hmm. only sex that is okay, mm-hmm. where you can't even be naked with your partner.
Right.
And have their naked body on you, except for your genitals. And yes. I'm just like, that's depressing and sad. Like it like broke my heart on yes. like on a level, yes. you know.
And in some very fundamentalist Islamic schools around the world, the female students, the girl students get tested at the school to see, they have an invasive physical test to see if they are still a virgin. And the children are subjected to it, even though there have been some laws passed in some of those countries saying, we don't allow this, don't do this. But of course, in the very fundamentalist, it's about hymen, about whether the hymens are still intact. And it's very archaic, the whole idea of it. And we know that it's also not accurate. So yeah, it's difficult. We need to be talking about the fallout and the damage, the religious trauma that is a part of purity culture indoctrination.
Oh yeah, because, you know, just to reiterate what you said, I mean, to be clear, the whole concept of virginity is in itself a social construct. That is not a medical thing, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What does that even mean? Like you mentioned, you know, this whole infatuation with, you know, hymens being intact. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not necessarily the case for everyone, whether or not you've had any kind of sexual mm-hmm. activity, mm-hmm. not to mention whether it was consensual or anything else. And it's disturbing to me that there are people trying to test for that, because I feel like the only way to check for that would be in a manner that sounds to me like it would be in and of itself an assault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So misogyny, sexism.
Yeah.
Smell it. Yes. And it stinks.
I wonder if any of our folks who are viewing or listening today are familiar with any of these pure woman metaphors. So I got my air quotes going, pure woman metaphors, maybe in youth group, maybe your youth pastor said, who wants some gum? And then they pulled it out of the package and they chewed it all up. And then they offered you a chewed up, wadded up piece of gum. And then they said, here's someone who's a woman who's had sex. And then otherwise, here's the pristine piece of gum still in the wrapper. This is the virgin. The gum one, I think, was pretty popular. I know the rose, the crumpled rose, or the rose with all the petals plucked out. These are all, of course, representing women. An Oreo. There's a brand new Oreo, or an Oreo that's been ripped apart and, you know, had the stuffing licked off, and the paper glued together, and then you try and rip the paper apart and it's saying just saying that that's what it's like whenever you have sex with someone, because your spirit is joined with them, and you know it's not right to rip it apart. But I saw an interview that was really powerful. I don't know if everyone here is old enough to remember the name Elizabeth Smart. She was a young Mormon girl who was kidnapped out of her home and held hostage, obviously with very mentally ill people. And she was talking in this interview. She had just the week before she turned 14. And so she'd been receiving a lot of purity culture indoctrination from her parents and her youth group in the church. And so she was, this is a trigger warning here. This is going to have a little bit of sexual assault talk. I'm sorry. But she was attacked and abused sexually by her kidnapper. And at that point, she wondered if it was even going to be worth it to try and escape, to ever get out, because nobody would want her, because she wasn't a virgin anymore. And I just thought, oh my God, to have to be coping with that nonsense on top of just the, how am I going to survive? What's going on here? So it's really important what we teach our sons and daughters about sex and sexuality.
I mean, like, I can relate to that, because I'm a sexual abuse survivor. And when I went through my own process growing up, when you are taught that somehow how men treat you is somehow something you did,
right?
Because that's the message you're getting, that right. It's something about you, when really it's about the person being a perpetrator and being a terrible human being. That is shit that you have to kind of work through. And when I heard her story, I completely understood it, because I was like, girl, I've been there. I wasn't kidnapped away from my home, but it's just stuff that happened to me. And my parents, you know, I love them and they're wonderful people, and they knew it wasn't my fault, but because of the messages, they didn't know how to have those conversations. Because one, they couldn't talk to me about sex. And two, I've been abused. How do you have that conversation when you weren't preparing your child for the positives of sexuality? How do you prepare them for the negative things that could happen? Mm-hmm. You know, and it took a lot of work on my end to deal with all that stuff. And that's why I can talk about it and not be triggered or re-traumatize mm-hmm. myself. Mm-hmm. But when you get these messages over and over again, that somehow what you do is your fault, like we are the gatekeepers of our sexuality. Right. And then if men you know, find us attractive and they come onto us, it's our fault. It's just not men having their own sexuality and their own desires and maybe got some toxic messaging as well.
Right.
You know, it is, it's on us as, you know, females. And that's also toxic to men because it teaches them that, oh, you know what? You are at a whim of what your penis wants to do.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. As if they don't have any self-control. And I also certainly do want to point out that it's not only girls and females who can be sexually assaulted and sexually abused.
No, and
I know
and
that
I,
this happens in the male community as well. And so we want to make sure that our children know the exact appropriate medical terms and names for all their body parts. So they can come, they can ask us questions about those body parts and that they understand about consent, that nobody's allowed to touch them without their consent. And of course I'm talking about informed consent. So it's not appropriate for an adult to be approaching a child who doesn't have an understanding and a grasp of what's involved with sex. That's never appropriate. So we need to be teaching our children to value themselves and that they have ownership of their own bodies.
And that is so important and so lacking from all of this purity culture ideology, which, you know, it's so concerning that there's so much emphasis placed on this idea of purity, where as long as you are a quote unquote virgin, which isn't even, as we discussed, a real thing, then you're good and people will love you and you can be in a relationship and you are loved by God. But if you're not for any reason, well, maybe no one will want you anymore. You're bad. You're impure. You're dirty. You're the chewed up bubble gum. You're the tape that won't sit together anymore. And when you present that information to kids in such strong terms and such black and white manner of thinking, it's absurd to think that that's not going to have negative impacts on people who experience assault or who have, you know, even engaged in sexual activity prior to being indoctrinated into purity culture. You're telling people that they're worthless. And I think it is so important when people like Elizabeth Smart and like Helen, how you just did, point out how damaging that was. That is not a good message to give out into the world where people experience sexual assault all the time.
Yes. Yes. And I think also teaching young people that if they'll just maintain their peer status until their wedding night, they will have a blissful sexual union that's blessed by God. If you don't know your own plumbing and how you work, and you don't know your partners, how it works for them, and you don't even have the words to communicate and talk about, does this feel good? You know, does that feel good? I feel strongly that everybody should have a list of yes, no, maybe. What, and there are different sites. I know Scarlet Teen has a really good yes, no, maybe chart for sexual things that you're willing to try or interested in or not interested in. I think it's good for teenagers and adults to be looking at some of those things and be aware of them. So they can give proper consent or, you know, properly withhold consent and say, no, that's not for me. I don't want to engage in that. But we can't just ignore it and pretend like sex doesn't exist.
Right. This idea that, you know, if we just teach kids that they'll be impure and unlovable if they don't have sex, then they won't do it and it will never come up. I'm sorry, that is not realistic. They're just going to go somewhere else for the information, or they're going to go out into the world without any information.
Right.
And that's not going to end well.
Right. And like, and imagine if you're like a queer person trying to navigate all this stuff. Like, luckily, like, you know, as a queer person, I was able to navigate it really well because I had wonderful supportive people around me. But if you're growing up in purity culture and, you know, you identify as a different gender or sexuality and trying to navigate all this shit, it's an additional trauma that's being put upon you, not only on the purity, like you're only supposed to between one man, one woman on your wedding night and make babies. And you're like, well, I'm gay. I don't want to have sex with the opposite gender. I want to have sex with someone that's my gender. And, and you're telling me that's bad. And I don't understand why. Mm-hmm. And I can't do anything about these desires. And that's another additional trauma that's being put on the trauma that's already happening. Mm-hmm. And so it's trauma all the way down. It's like turtles.
Traumatized turtles all the way down.
Trauma turtles. It's trauma turtles.
Trauma turtles all the way down.
Well, you know, I wrote down some thoughts about overcoming sexual shame, and I thought some of these might be helpful for some of the folks who are watching or listening to this. What we need to do is disconnect shame from pleasure. That's what we want to do. Disconnect shame from pleasure. And we need to deconstruct the sexual shame teachings that we received. So there's those teachings of shame. They came from somewhere. They didn't come from just us. They came from a parent or a Sunday school or youth group teacher. Someone taught us what they thought was shameful. So we need to recognize what those teachings were, where they came from, and that they are not ours. We want to challenge the sexual shame messages. We want to really develop self-compassion and swap out judgment for curiosity. That's one of my favorite things that I work with my clients on when they've grown up in fundamentalist homes. We want to, anytime judgment is coming up, we want to do our best to swap it out for curiosity, because curiosity opens the world. It expands the world for us. Judgment and fear, they shut it down. So we can also let ourselves be curious about sex and sexuality. We want to allow ourselves to experiment with pleasure and feeling pleasure without judgment. And defining pleasure for ourselves. My partner might think something is completely pleasurable, and I might be like, nope, not for me. That is not for me. I don't think that's pleasurable. So we need to find out for ourselves what feels good. What feels good, but not labeling good or bad to the experience. It's just experience. Okay. We can have all sorts. I always tell people, life is a buffet table. There's so many experiences there for us. And religion and fundamentalism would have us starve to death right in front of that buffet table. And we're not bound by that anymore. We can take a bite of every dish on that table, as long as it's not against the law and as long as it's not harming another person. We're free to try anything on that table, and we don't have to label it good or bad. It might just be an experience we don't wish to repeat. And then we go on to the next one. Oh, and I like this one. Make pleasure your goal. That sounds really good. Make pleasure your goal.
That sounds a lot better than the purity culture teaching. Yes,
exactly. Do what you want rather than what you think you should. So that's, again, about giving ourselves permission. We can learn about and practice consent. BDSM can be helpful for this, as can non-sexual massage. So if we're not comfortable with another person touching our body, or maybe no one else ever has touched our body, you can go to a licensed professional massage therapist that you feel comfortable with as a way to just potentially get more comfortable with the idea of someone touching your body. And you can also practice consent right there when they're giving you a massage on the massage table. No, I don't want you to touch my calf, please, but you may touch my foot. So those are just some things to think about. I also encourage people to research how other cultures view sexuality. I love that assignment. And there was the most wonderful series by Amanpour and Company called Sex and Love Around the World. And I recommend you all watch it. And I also recommend this wonderful new movie called Good Luck to You, Leo Grande. I watched that recently, and it has to do with an older person whose partner has died, and they are wanting to connect with someone to experience pleasure and see what pleasure would be like for them. Good Luck to You, Leo Grande is that one. And the series is called Sex and Love Around the World.
I love that you brought that up. First of all, that movie is on my watch list. I cannot wait. The trailer a while back. I'm super excited about it. I love that it's a different take on sexuality, that I get the impression from the trailer that there's going to be some attention paid to female enjoyment of sex.
Yes, and it is the movie with Emma Thompson. I know somebody.
Oh, I do see that trailer. Okay, yeah. I saw the trailer. It's on my watch list. It's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu. Okay, yeah. And I also like it because there's a significant age difference between the two people involved. And I recently got married in July, and my partner is 21 years older than me. And so it's beautiful and wonderful, and it's also different. I've never been in a relationship with someone with such an age gap before, and it was just a real treat to kind of see that reflected on the screen.
I love that, and congratulations, by the way.
Yeah. I'm very happy. We are having lots of sex.
Yay. Good for
and
you.
That's a really good message also to get out about May, December relationships, that you can have, they can be really healthy, but we have these ideas like you need to marry someone or be in a relationship that's closer to you in age, when really it's about, is everybody consenting? Is everybody like, you know, they just accept people for who they are, where you at in life, and you love the person for who they are, and there's no power dynamic, because you can be a 24-year-old and have control over a 44-year-old. You know, it has nothing to do with age. It has to do with consent and loving the person for who they are and where they are. And we need to get also that old baggage out as well, about, you know, these age differences about relationships and what they're supposed to look like and all this type of shit, because that's also a bunch of toxic messaging we got to get rid of as well. I'm on my sexual freedom train.
I love it. I love it. No, and I like also, you know, again, that relates back to what you were talking about too, Janice, with this Sex and Love Around the World. I haven't seen that, but, you know, as a cultural anthropologist myself, I'm very fond of pointing to other places and times in the world and saying, look over here and see how this thing that you're saying is abnormal is not in fact abnormal. There's a lot of diversity in human populations and practices and preferences. And I think a lot of people that grow up in this very small bubble of what is supposed to be acceptable and approved of by God, people tend to like to say, oh, well, that's natural. If you're doing something that's outside of my bubble, that's so unnatural. Well, I'm sorry, you might want to get out and meet some more people. Find out you don't quite, you're not well versed in what all it is that the humans do, it turns out.
Or spend time in nature or watch some nature documentaries, because everyone is not straight in nature.
Nature is very queer. Yes. This is, I love it when people say, oh, it's unnatural. Really? Have you been in nature?
Have you seen the bonobos?
Bonobos?
Bonobos. Bonobos.
Have you met seahorses? It was a lot of bees. Yes.
Well, I wrote down, because Dr. Darrell, he loves my quotes, and I know he's not here this time, but I wanted to give some quotes for him, because I'm sure he'll watch this at some point.
Yes.
And I got some quotes from the old actress who's gone on now, and her name is Mae West. So she was really from a long time ago.
And I know, she was amazing.
She was very, very sexy and very, very sexual at a time when women were not supposed to be those things. And I'm sure, we can agree with her comment here. I certainly do. A hard man is good to find. I like that one.
That's great. And then,
another time she said, sex with love is the greatest thing in life, but sex without love, that's not bad either. Again, she's right. She was a pretty wise woman. And then the last one, this one tickled me. Having sex is like playing the card game bridge. If you don't have a good partner, you better have a good hand.
Excellent.
Sexual icon.
Great advice. Mm-hmm.
You know, she even spent time in jail for being, she wrote a play all about sex. I think it was called Sex. And they put her in jail for it for 8 or 10 days for contributing to the, you know, whatever, the downfall of society by talking
about sex. Well, was it during the time of the Hays Code?
Maybe. I don't know much about Hays. I don't like hazing.
I know. It's all bad, but I'm just...
Tell us more about that, Helen. This had to do with what was allowed to be put in movies and on TV, right?
Yeah. And it's really funny, like the stuff that they did get away with, like, you know, you couldn't have overt sexuality, but a lot of it was in dialogue. It mm-hmm. was suggested, like Alfred Hitchcock was one of the people that like kind of pushed against the Hays Code and did like a lot of suggestive things during that time. But like basically it was like, you can't mention sex, you can't have this idea of people actually fucking, you can kiss, but like you can't have any idea that people actually have sex. But like Some Like It Hot, which is about two men dressing up as women, was written during the Hays Code.
Yes. Wow. So, which is so incredible to me. If you go back and watch this film, in so many ways, it seems so much more progressive than a lot of the other garbage programming that we have received in decades since. And that was from, when is that, 50s, 60s?
Yeah, I think it was the 50s. But like, if you go back and look at classic movies that were written during the era of the Hays Code, I can't remember the exact years because I am not a film aficionado people, but I know like a little bit of film history. Like if you go back and look at these films, there is a lot of sexual innuendo that is on screen if you know what you're looking for. Like if you know that, because we live in the modern era and there's modern dialogue and sexual dialogue and nudity and all kinds of shit all the time. But back then, like directors had to be really subtle. They were gay characters, people that were coded as gay, people that were coded queer. Thank you. 1934 to 68 was the Hays Code.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. If you go and look at those films at those times, that because at the time they wanted to keep things very pure, quote unquote, very much about like, you know, in that idea of like heteronormative relationships, but not sex. Mm-hmm. And people talk about, oh, it was such a pure time at that time, and there was no dirtiness in films. I'm like, girl, have you watched some of those movies?
Right.
Like, you need it. Like,
yeah. Yeah. They were getting around the code.
Yeah, they were getting around it.
Yeah. And I love how people try and do this sort of invention of tradition where they will, you know, suggest that these puritanical values, this purity culture, you know, well, this is just the way it's always been. You know, it's just in recent years that people have become, you know, depraved and hypersexual. No, let's go back and look at some of the content from 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago prior to that. People have always been this way. People have always been gay. You know, there's always been an LGBT community, whether or not it was legal. People have always been having sex. You know, this is how people are.
When I came out of religion, when I divorced religion, that was when I started accepting my own sexual attractions and that I am bisexual. But I knew that probably from about the time I was 12 years old that I was attracted to females and males, but I just could never act on it. So just tried to keep it out of my mind, you know, married a man who became a pastor and, you know, that whole thing. And it wasn't until I really started purging myself of religion that I was able to start embracing who I am and to do so without shame. So that's good.
Well, I am so glad that you did, because now you're able to help other people do that too. And that is what we need. I cannot say thank you enough for working on that, because, you know, that's something that I grew up in that affected me tremendously. It's, mm-hmm. it's probably, you know, one of the main reasons that I ended up leaving religion mm-hmm. was because of how harmful that messaging was. Mm-hmm. And I know there are so many other people that also affects who have felt the effects of it throughout their life. It's not just something that, you know, you learned as a teenager and then you grew up and it went away, mm-hmm. right? This mm-hmm. kind of harmful messaging can stick with us for decades.
Yes. And speaking for myself, the work that I do with putting on the conferences, the conference on religious trauma and the divorcing religion workshop and the shameless mm-hmm. sexuality conference, I can never undo the teaching that I inflicted on my daughters. I just can't. It's in the past. Since then, we have had many frank conversations, many apologetic conversations and letters on my part to them as I grew in the recognition of what my purity culture indoctrination, how it could have negatively impacted them, and wanting them to be sure that they knew they could both come to me about anything and ask me about anything, because they were in their teens by the time their father and I split up and my whole deconstruction really was well underway. So part of the reason that I do the work I do is just wanting to make up in some way for the harmful teachings that I was involved in and things that I told other people as well. I wish we lived in a world where no one felt shame around sex. That's a world I'd like to live in.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is so powerful though, that, you know, that you were able to do that, because, you know, I know a lot of people probably would have not had the courage to come out and say, you know what, all this stuff that I told you that I felt very strongly about, I was wrong about that. You know, mm-hmm. that's hard. And I think there are people that probably stay in those beliefs rather than have to admit that I've changed my mind, or mm-hmm. I did something that I now realize may have been harmful. I mean, that's mm-hmm. huge to be able to come back and say that. That's
Thank you.
Incredible. I'm glad you did that.
I am glad too. And it certainly opened up my relationship with my daughters, who are now both adults. And we have very frank and open conversations on any topic, including sex. You know, if there are questions or anything that's come up that they've had, or if they've wanted me to attend doctor's appointments with them to get IUDs and this sorts of things when they were in their teens, I was so happy to go and to be part of that, and just showing them how happy I was for them to be sexually free and to be careful so that, you know, they don't have to worry about pregnancy. And yeah, that's the good part of parenting. We get to speak into our young people's lives, into our children's lives, and hopefully have some positive impact on them.
That is amazing. I know you're having a positive impact, that you're able to do all of those things. That's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you for all the work that you do, Janice. Like, because it takes a village. It does, yeah. Because everybody that's part of this community is like, we were taught some bullshit. There's a lot of some terrible messaging that we got, and the fact that we don't want future generations to have the baggage, like they're gonna have their own baggage, everybody does, but like, let's not take sexual baggage into adulthood. Let's not take that with us, you know. Mm-hmm. Let's get away from that bad thinking and bad ideas, you know, that lead to so many problems.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter how old we are today. Yeah. We can start today to, to learn about healthy sexuality and to start researching and exploring. And, you know, maybe you start very gently by watching some of the shows that we were just talking about that are on like regular TV. And then maybe you get, you move on as you feel a bit more curious and a bit more confident. And you just don't have to feel any shame around it.
Yes, that is is great advice. Just get out there whenever it is that you're arriving here.
That's right. Yeah.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing your insights on all of that. I love every time you come on and talk with us. I feel like
we do love you, Janice.
Well, you keep inviting me back, so I can do it all the time.
It's a good sign.
We want you part of the RFRX cult.
I love it.
One of us.
Sign me up.
Yes. We don't really have a roll sheet or anything. It's okay. No. But so, okay, before we go on to Q&A, because we do have a lot of questions, is there anything else that you want to mention or share or talk about?
Well, I want people to know that they can go to the Conference on Religious Trauma YouTube channel, and that's where they will find recordings from the inaugural court 2021. So I'm just putting those up at one every 2 weeks, and then now every alternate week, I'll be putting up one of my podcasts, the Divorcing Religion podcast. So people can also sign up and subscribe there on the Conference on Religious Trauma YouTube channel. And go to shamelesssexuality.org in order to get your ticket for the Shameless Sexuality Conference. And do reach out to me if you're having financial difficulty, but you really want to attend. And of course, you can come to my website, divorcing-religion.com. or divorcing-religion.com. So my story is on there and my blog is on there. You can book me for one-on-one religious recovery consulting sessions, and you can sign up for my group workshop, the Divorcing Religion Workshop.
I love that. And I'm posting all of that stuff in the chat right now. And we're going to put those links out. And I'm also putting this list of resources in there. I love every time you come on, you have so many useful resources, and it fills up my playlist on my Audible and my library app for like months and months to come. So I'm still catching up. I'm still becoming cliterate. And
yes, the author. Dr. Lori, she's going to be speaking at our conference.
Cara. I see what you did there.
It's a book. It's a book you can buy, Becoming Cliterate.
I love it. Yeah. So everybody go check those out. I am still checking all of those out, and we are lifelong learners here. So, and there's no shame in that. So thank you for sharing all of those resources with us. Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay, well, we have questions for you. Are you ready to answer questions?
I'll try.
Okay, all right. So the first question, I already jumped the gun on. Somebody asked what your links were, and I posted that in the chat. So yes. The next question, and this is one that is really interesting to me that we touched on a little bit, but maybe we could delve a little bit deeper into it, is how does purity culture differ for men and women?
Right. Yes. So females, women, little girls, girl teenagers are really taught that their body is a huge stumbling block. I've got my air quotes. Have you all heard that? You don't want to be a stumbling block for your brother. So that when our bodies start changing and developing you know, we can be a stumbling block to the preacher, to our, even to a to one of our brothers or to a teacher. So our responsibility is to dress in such a way that we do not look sexual at all. So nothing form fitting. And of course, most of us who were fundamentalists, we just had to wear skirts and dresses all the time, long skirts and dresses. Some groups, your arms always also have to be covered. And so the teaching is that the female is just dangerous, but with the boys are taught that it's their lustful thoughts that can, you know, send them to hell, and that masturbation is bad, and that pornography is bad. And you know, I worked as a medical transcriptionist for years and years, some online and then in some hospitals, different hospitals, and I had more than one case, or I was familiar with more than one case where a patient had actually taken out their eyes because they were having a psychotic break. And they that verse in the Bible, the verses are damaging, they're dangerous, they're toxic. So we don't want to make boys feel bad about masturbating, or that their thoughts are bad or their desires are bad. And we don't want girls to feel that way either. We don't want anyone to feel that their body is bad and the cause of trouble for other people.
Oh, such good points. Yeah. I remember growing up learning that too. We had a textbook at a seminar we used to go to with the Bill Gothard program, yes, which is one of the fundamentalist ones. Yeah. And they had a whole section on eye traps where it had like depictions and everything of like, you know, types of clothing women should avoid wearing because, you know, someone might notice your chest, or if you have, you know, sequins or glittery material, it could call attention to your body, or even certain hairstyles that are, the hairstyles weren't, this is kind of interesting. It's not that the hairstyles were considered too provocative, but they were not attractive enough. So it was like this weird tension between you need to look just exactly this one particular way, but also if you take it even like a millimeter too far, you're a stumbling block, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Like, I work with a lot of people who grew up in the IBLP or the Gothard cult, and it can be very damaging. And of course, in Christian fundamentalism, your hair is to reflect your gender, and so you're supposed to have short hair if you're a male and long hair if you're a female. There are all these rules around it, and you know what, it's just one day for me, my Christianity corset was too tight and I just broke it and I spilled out of the whole thing, never to go back again. I'll never again be told by someone else how I must live. I decide that for myself.
Like
I've seen it also in like purity culture, like YouTubers now, that they talk about wearing like makeup in a godly way, whatever the fuck that means. Like, you know, like these ideas, like how you, what clothes you wear, you know, even what colors you wear and what kind of messaging you're sending out. And it's very weird because there's like this mixed messaging going on. Like you want to attract a mate.
Yes.
You know, so you have to be attractive, but not too attractive or too like provocative. And there's just like these really weird arbitrary rules that they've been putting on young people, which is very confusing.
It's very confusing because it's on the one hand telling you, because this is very misogynistic and coming usually from a male perspective, that you have to be attractive to and please your husband and be sexually available and attractive for him, but also you're a hoe.
Did you ever hear that saying, which always kind of made me cringe, modest is hottest?
Oh God.
How is that for confusing? That is very confusing. So yes, confusing. I see you dressed like you're wearing a tent, but I also know you must be hiding something like really good under there, and I want some.
Well, it was like, to quote the great Trixie Mattel, drag queen extraordinaire, like she was like, okay, she's like, can you imagine like pulling up to an Ulta and like walking in there and going, you know, what kind of eyeliner would God wear? Like, I was just like,
It's so much. It's all about control. It's all about religious fundamentalism and purity culture, very much about control, controlling other people.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Okay, we've got more questions. Helen, do you have one?
I have a question. So someone was asking if Boy K. Pecker's For Young Men Only pamphlet is on your bad sex advice list.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand the first part.
Boy K. Pecker's For Young Men Only is a pamphlet, apparently. Copies could be purchased from the Church of the 2016.
Wow, I've never heard of that, but I do definitely want to say again that sex is between consenting people who have reached the age of majority. So, you know, we're not talking about no one who's 12. It's, you know, that's not really the time. You're too young. You can't, you don't know how to consent. You have to be a mature teen or adult. You know, it's, you have different laws and rules according to whatever state you are in or whatever part of the world. Consent has to be informed. People have to know what they're getting into. So it's never appropriate to be having sex with someone who can't consent.
Excellent point. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one either. That wasn't one of the pamphlets they had at my church, but it must have been going around in some others. I can only imagine. I'm going to be Googling that later.
Do so at your peril.
Yes.
I you might get angry.
Yeah, I'm certain I will. This topic tends to make me angry. Oh, okay. Somebody put the link in the chat. So yeah, we'll be checking that out.
Yeah.
Okay, now this is an interesting question. In the context of purity culture and our conversation tonight, do you have any thoughts on the so-called incel movement? Do you feel that that is connected here? Can you comment on that?
There certainly could be a connection. I mean, we know that repression often kind of can lead to obsession. So if we're in homes where purity culture really is a sexually repressed environment, you're not allowed to think about it, watch it, you know, read about it, whatever. And so I think that can also make it really hard for young men to approach young women when they are interested, and they might be socially awkward and not have the skills. And so then if they do try and approach them, they're rebuffed because the women don't feel, or the girls, teenagers don't feel safe with them, or they're not attracted to them. And this can lead to the cycle not only of shame, but of anger. And they really focus on that anger. And then there's a lot of blame going on that the other people, the women, the females don't want to have sex with them. And that can just lead to such terrible tragedy. So we really need to have places where people can be talking. We want our young men and our boys to know that they can talk to us about sex. And about, you know, problems they're having, issues they're having. And they also can go to a doctor, and there are therapists that they can talk to as well, that they don't have to feel shame. They can bring it up to us.
I'm just kind of piggybacking off that too. I fell into a deep dive of incel culture. Don't recommend, but I did. Yeah. And a lot of these men, some of them have, like, they're on the spectrum, so they're already having issues with social interactions.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And then there's this media also reflection that comes with it too, that you have to be a certain kind of man to get women, you know. And it's all based on arbitrary bullshit that isn't what reflects in reality, and it leads to a lot of self-harm behavior, because they go online and they get involved in communities that are reinforcing that, you know, reinforcing this thing about themselves that it contributes to their low self-esteem. Because even if they mention within the communities, oh, I'm gonna start working out, or I'm gonna take up like guitar playing, people in the community will tell them, why are you doing that? There's no point, because you're always going to be this type of person. Mm-hmm. So it's a form of digital self-harm. So it's a perpetual cycle of low self-esteem, mm-hmm. you know, being socially awkward or not knowing how to develop those skills. They're isolated. Mm-hmm. They're already dealing with a lot of issues, and they've gone online and find these communities of people right. that they think are supportive yeah. and they're not. Right. And it leads to that cycle. So like, am I excusing the misogyny? No, I'm not excusing it. I am not excusing it, but to kind of throw them in the dumpster and say that they're all but some misogynistic, you know, asshats that want to hate women and think that we're only there for sexual gratification. It's because that's the messages that is being reinforced over and over again.
It starts somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it starts somewhere. And it's because they already feel like outsiders. They feel like the things that were promised them as like a man living in the modern age, they're supposed to get certain things.
Right.
And they don't get those things because, you know, of social status, of the way they look, of, you know, the way their brains are, right. whatever it is, mm-hmm. it leads to a lot of self-destructive behaviors. And I'm not saying it's right and I want them to get help, but I don't want to excuse them as like sure. terrible people, you know?
Right. That reminds me of a couple of books. Someone in our chat just recommended one called It Came From Something Awful. And that book looks at the origins of incel community. But also there's a really interesting book called Jesus and John Wayne. And that is kind of looking at how the idealized Christian man, and that falls into the purity culture purview as well, that he has to be big and strong and manly and mm-hmm. leader, you know, leader, he's doing leadership and all this kind of stuff. And those are not all men are like that. Not all boys are like that. We don't, why are we trying to put our children into those molds? We have to give our kids permission and room to be who they are and develop as they develop.
Yes, this Christian masculinity thing. I went on a deep dive down the internet on that one recently too. Yeah. And it's disturbing. You know, we do focus a lot on how damaging this messaging is towards women and basically any non-male, non-hetero people, but mm-hmm. yes, it's toxic masculinity is a real thing, you know? Yeah. And I recently heard from someone, this had never even occurred to me before, but someone mentioned that their whole life they had gone along, they had heard the phrase toxic masculinity, and it offended them because they thought that it was saying that being masculine or being a man was in and of itself toxic.
Right.
And they didn't understand that it's actually referring to a way of describing and prescribing masculinity in a way that is harmful to men. It's not right. saying men are bad. It's trying to push this ideology onto men sure. in a way that is damaging.
I mean, and for that matter, there can be toxic femininity too. If we think, I have to submit all the time and I just have to be so sweet and all this stuff, which again, purity culture completely, you know, wants to indoctrinate females that way. And that is no good either.
Yeah, the 100%. Keep sweet. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what my brain went to, the keep sweet attitude. And like, and I think that we talk a lot about the misogyny and the bigotry that happens against queer people in these cultures. But like as Cara said, we have to recognize that this harms young men too. And we have mm-hmm. to have those conversations mm-hmm. because the world that we're living in, this, you know, this idea of that things are changing. And I think a lot of young men don't know what to do with these changes, especially those that have grown up in Christian cultures that are promised certain things. And a lot of women are also fighting back against that and being like, well, I don't want to be subservient to my husband. I want to be able to have a job, and I want to be able to be an equal in my household. And their preacher's telling them, no, you want a woman that's going to submit to you, do all the things that she's supposed to do, and blah, 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 blah. And you're supposed to be like this, you know, that way you talk, that toxic Christianity manhood thing. Mm-hmm. It's all these ideas are bad for everybody. Like, it's like, right. Regardless of gender, mm-hmm. sexuality, like all these ideas are bad. They're bad. They're bad, 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 bad.
Right. Like, if you can't be a good, godly, you know, head of your household, if women won't submit anymore, then you're going to be upset about feminism because it means you can't be a good man, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you do have to dismantle both sides of it together, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In order to, you know, really be inclusive for everyone that's being harmed. So,
right. Yeah. And we know that religion, and particularly fundamentalism, as the world seems to get like crazier and feel, you know, less and less certain, we want certainty, security, and order. We gravitate towards things that will, you know, simple answers for complex problems, which really don't exist. But this is why people run to religion in times of transition. And now we see them running to conspiracy theories because they must feel someone has the answer. Oh, thank goodness. Now I know the truth. Now I know the answer. I just have to do A, B, and C, and everything will be perfect. And sorry, but life doesn't work that way. Life is random. The universe is random. You can do everything right and still not end up with things the way you want. So we need to educate ourselves about reality, about how the world actually works and how we can be resilient. Here's a rabbit hole for you.
Excellent, excellent point.
Get off my soapbox.
No, that's what we brought you here for. Yeah, well, I think we probably have time for one more question. What do you say, Helen?
Yeah, we kind of went over, but this has been a really important topic to talk about. And so, you know, and we all, like, you know, the three of us, you know, we went on some rabbit trails. So I'm going to ask one more question to close off the night. Has there been a number of previous purity culture advocates who have changed their stance?
Well, the most popular one is that guy, Josh, what's his name? And he did I Kiss Dating Goodbye, right? He wrote that book. And then I was like, no, don't read that book. That was a terrible book. I was completely wrong and misled. And so there may be others. He's one that really comes to mind, but it seems like every day we are hearing about people who were very staunch, devout evangelical Christians or whatever kind of Christians, and their eyes are opening. They're starting to hear about religious trauma and religious trauma syndrome, and they're doing some exploration. And they are on that deconstruction journey, and a lot of them end up fully deconverted. There was that guy, that YouTube guy, Rhett somebody, remember? Rhett and Link, remember them?
Yes,
and so he was one of the ones there. But as far as strictly purity culture, I don't know of any more, but I'm sure there will be more in the days.
Rhett and Link did a really good podcast on their deconstruction process on their podcast that I listened to, and that was really interesting. There's also the people that were part of the Exodus movement within the gay community, and they're now speaking out against purity culture and anti-gay sentiment within and also fighting about the work that they did, like, mm-hmm. you know, where they were doing these workshops and this idea that homosexuality was a choice. And
workshops, exorcisms performed on some of them. Yeah, so I'm glad that, you know, the lid is finally coming off the pot and people are starting to yell about religious trauma and religious trauma syndrome and recovery, the recovery help that's available through organizations like Recovering from Religion.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.